So could you possibly start by breaking down the latest survey results? How much coral have we lost according to the latest data?
Yeah, happy to do that. So the Australian Institute of Marine Science has been running the long-term monitoring program for 39 years. Our latest surveys covered 124 reefs across the Great Barrier Reef, which is a massive place the size of a small country like Italy. We survey representative reefs to capture most of the environmental gradients that occur across the reef. And we do, in our reporting, break it down into, you know, chunk size bites that that we can deliver messaging on. And that's three major regions, as you said, the northern, the central, and the southern Great Barrier Reef. So in the northern region, which extends north from Cooktown to Cape York, we saw fairly substantial impacts across a majority of reefs in that area. And as a region, it's lost about a quarter of the coral cover that was there prior to the summer of 2024. The central region was less impacted, and that extends from about Cooktown down to Proserpine, and that lost about 14% of the coral cover. And then the southern region, which covers from Proserpine south, lost almost a third of the coral cover that we saw prior to the summer of 2024.
Jeez. And what role does heat play in coral loss?
Well, in this particular instance, it played a very large role. So the Great Barrier Reef underwent the largest, most severe heat marine wave that we've seen on the Great Barrier Reef since we've been monitoring. We saw heat stress levels reach record proportions, particularly in the southern third of the reef, which has always kind of fared a lot better than the centre and north in previous bleaching events. But the heat stress causes coral bleaching. So corals live very close associated with a little algae. They reside inside the tissue, and they're the little powerhouses for the corals, supply most of the energy for them. But when the temperatures of the waters rise, that relationship actually turns toxic, and the algae starts leaching toxic chemicals into the tissues of the coral. And the coral's response then is to eject these algae. And that's the phenomenon we know as bleaching, because beside providing the energy, the algae also supply the color. And once the algae have been ejected from the coral tissues, the coral tissue is actually translucent, and you can see through to the bare white skeleton, and so the coral looks like it's white then. And so heat stress is the major cause in this instance. But we also had two tropical cyclones that contributed to the losses that we've seen. In particular, Tropical Cyclone Jasper impacted the reef just north of Cairns, and kind of sat as a tropical depression once it had crossed the coast for a number of days, and produced a massive flood plume that also lowered the salinity on a lot of the coastal reefs between Cairns and Cooktown. And that lowered salinity also added to the stress levels that the corals received, and so has contributed in some way as well.
Yeah. You'll hear some people in sections of the media talking about how the reef actually has some of the most coral that it's ever had, but that coral is quite susceptible to weather events, right?
Well, that's correct. So up until this report, we had reported that the GBR had record high coral cover, which was a great thing. One issue there is that a lot of that coral is made up of these fast-growing corals. They're called a cropera. And while they're fast to grow, they're unfortunately also really susceptible to the three major disturbances that we get on the Great Barrier Reef. So coral bleaching, as I've just mentioned, but they're also the preferred food for crown of thorns starfish, which are a predatory starfish that obviously eats coral. But they're also, because they're fast growing, their skeletons are quite fragile as well. So they're very susceptible to wave damage, and that's, you know, occurs with cyclones, but also subtropical storms as well. And so a lot of the recovery and the high coral cover that we saw was due to these corals, not all of it, but they're the primary driver of it. And unfortunately, in the summer of 2024, the confluence of the two cyclones, the flooding plus the bleaching, has meant that many of those corals that were responsible for the high levels have unfortunately died.
Right. Okay. And can we expect more of these bleaching events going into the future?
Unfortunately, that's absolutely going to happen. So bleaching events don't happen in isolation. They're actually part of a pattern. Prior to the 1990s, these regional scale bleaching events were rare. But since 1998, that was the first mass coral bleaching event we saw on the Great Barrier Reef. We've had subsequent events in 2002, 2016, 2017, which was the first back-to-back event, then 2020, 2022, 2024, and we did have another event unfold this summer. And the predictions are that these events are only going to continue and likely to increase in their frequency and probably their severity as well. So we're staring down the barrel of a future of probably annual or biennial bleaching events for the Great Barrier Reef, which, as you pointed out at the start, leaves very little time for these corals to recover in between those events.
Jeez. And what needs to happen on a global and domestic scale as well to reduce the impacts?
Well, the number one thing we need to do, Nelson, is reduce global greenhouse emissions, which are driving up the temperatures of the world's oceans. You know, we're seeing record-breaking levels of heat stress occurring around the globe, and the only way to curb that is to reduce the primary driver of that, so the greenhouse gas emissions. Locally, what we can do is continue some of the management actions that we've seen put into place on the Great Barrier Reef. For example, I mentioned the Crown of Thorns starfish outbreaks. There is an active control program that is carried out on the Great Barrier Reef. So teams of divers go out where they find these outbreak numbers. And we're talking, you know, tens of thousands per hectare at some places where it's really bad, but they can go out and actively cull those starfish. So that's important because it saves coral, but not only saves coral, it also saves the corals that have survived bleaching events. So the ones that have the genetic makeup and the makeup of those symbiotic algae I talked about that somehow got them through that bleaching event. So it's really important to continue those type of actions. And then the final thing that you know, we can do in the interim until we get greenhouse gas emissions under control is look at ways to help the corals adapt through genetic enhancements and restoration activities.
Yeah. And just a hypothetical out of curiosity, if, say, we weren't as a global community able to combat emissions and they were to increase and subsequently the temperature of the water increase, what would that mean for coral in places like New South Wales where it's naturally a bit colder? Would there be more coral there?
Well, that's potentially a result. You know, we've seen some tropicalisation down along the New South Wales coast. We're already seeing some of the, you know, the reef fish that inhabit the Great Barrier Reef. They naturally make it down to, you know, the coast around Sydney and further. But they never made it through the winter because it was below the lower thermal threshold for them. But we're actually starting to see small populations of those fishes survive the winter now and establish, you know, viable populations around there. There's also the potential for corals to move further south as the temperatures increase. That's a very hard thing to see. You know, obviously we don't have a crystal ball, but certainly if oceans continue to warm at the rate that they are, there is potential for that to happen.